If she realized that she no longer wanted to read newspapers to see who'd died and complain about what the weather might be. Finally, she was herself again, and she did feel most herself when she looked half her age. That night, free from the enchantments and worries that had nearly torn the group apart the day before, they dined on pasta and red wine, acting as if nothing horrible had ever been revealed in the magic net. Even Poltro didn't mention the word curry a single time. Leaving Groggan, they skirted the Coochie Hills that form the border between several earldoms, and almost as soon as they left Grunting, the land began to dry out underneath their feet, and springy turf gave way to brown, thirsty earth with only occasional sad shrubs longing for a tall drink of water. And then even that meager substrate began to slip and break down until they were cruising across the rippling dunes of the cool desert. And Grinda exulted in the feeling of sand between her toes again. If she didn't like the beach so much, she would have enjoyed living among these dunes and all the cool people. Their penchant for gauzy, flowing fabrics and vibrant head coverings maximized her beauty, which was even further accentuated by the sultry gait of a leggy camel undulating over the dunes. Carriages were lovely, but there was something to be said for the poetry of a lolloping dromedary, and also for good old poetry. A single verse from a cool poet could titillate or tantalize like no other. And their chapbooks made fantastic beach reads. For someone like Grinda, it was a win-win-win situation, with an extra win tacked on after a camel spat on Lord Toby. When they finally reached the entrance to the catacombs, a heavy wooden door, reinforced with bars of rusted metal, confronted them. Grinda wondered if the handle would even work. There were no footprints in front of the entrance, but plenty of weathered warning signs. "Rats and bats," one sign said. "Beware the acid leeches," another cautioned. "Watch out for the tongues, for reals." But it included an illustration that didn't look like any real tongue Grinda had ever seen. "The horrors of yore," yet another sign warned. "And bees!" The last one cried out, its lettering drawn in an unsteady, mad hand. The excess of exclamation points obviously placed there to inspire fear.
"I have so many questions," Poltro said. "It all starts out just fine, rats and bats being the sort of thing you'd expect in the catacombs. But then it all goes a bit wobbly, doesn't it? Are the acid leeches made of acid? Or injecting their victims with acid? Or are they actually leeching acid from your blood and tissue? The adjective is ambiguous. And these tongues now, are they hanging out by themselves, so to speak, or hiding inside something's mouth? If they are in something's mouth, how are we supposed to watch for them? And aren't catacombs at least partially defined by a complete lack of sunshine, which would not be an ideal growing environment for flowers? And without flowers, you're probably not going to have bees at all, right? Much less bees with surplus punctuation." "There's an easy way to find out," Fia said, twisting the creaky handle until the mechanism slid open with a screech and clunk. She hauled the door open, and an unholy, fusty funk of death and black licorice assailed their nostrils.
"Interesting," Gustav commented. "Y'all go first."
"Specifically Lord Toby and Poltro," Fia amended, "for your crimes against goatkind."
"There are no such crimes," the Dark Lord huffed. "I was enchanted."
"And you can't be mad at someone for being enchanted. That's double jeopardy."
"Hold on,"
Grinda said, peering into the entrance. Light penetrated only so far into the yawning orifice, and she doubted there would be handy torch sconces around. Time to try out the new wand. She withdrew it, traced a circle in the air as it pointed downward, and chanted,
"Krogla Svetloba."
A small tempest of topsoil whipped up from the ground, formed a sphere of dust, and began to glow from within. It dropped into her outstretched hand, and she presented it to Poltro.
"It's fragile," she explained, "but at least you'll be able to see where you're going in the dark."
The so-called Dark Lord snorted contemptuously.
"There's no need for such cumbersome trinkets," he said, fishing a small vial from his pack, the contents of which glowed green. "I have a much better solution."
He unscrewed the lid, shook out a tiny bit of the green stuff onto his fingertips, and placed his hand flat against the wall on the right-hand side.
"What's that, my lord?"
Poltrow asked. Toby's voice glided into pomposity like hairless arms into the sweeping sleeves of a comfortable robe.
"A curious kind of algae that thrives in darkness and emits its own light. I can spur its miraculous growth and spare us the need for these dirt balls."
He turned to the wall and intoned in a more respectful voice,
"Gleep na globin so ball."
The algae bloomed and spread underneath his fingers and then rapidly raced down the rock of the hallway, providing a faint, eldritch glow to which their eyes would soon adjust.
"That's so much more useful than bread,"
Thea murmured, and when everyone looked at her, remembering that his almost crackers had once been their only source of nutrition, she hastened to add,
"I mean right now, anyway." "It's quite useful, I'm thinking,"
Poltrow said, tossing Grinda's globe back to her. The sphere promptly crumbled when the sandwich tried to catch it.
"We can walk in there and have both hands free, which will be terribly handy if one might need a dagger in one hand and a turkey leg in the other, or if, say, one must swat away some bees."
The Dark Lord looked supremely smug as he sauntered to the other side of the corridor and repeated the process with the algae. With the glow coming from both sides, and even the beginnings of the ceiling lighting up, nothing would surprise them in the dark. In fact, a skulking rat, intent on skullduggery, squeaked its dismay at the sudden illumination and scampered off into the cavernous depths, trying to find some place appropriately dark in which to skulldig.
"Yes, this is good,"
Arcabella said.
"I need both hands to play my lute."
Grinda ground her teeth while Lord Toby preened and fondled his beard extensions, as if they had made him infinitely wiser than she. Some of the glowing algae got in his beard, she noted, and nobody said anything. He was an occasionally useful fool, and she would need to remind herself of his usefulness when his foolishness tested her patience. Like now, when she needed to protect them.
"Hold still, please,"
she said, waving her wand to encompass the entire group. "I'm going to cast a seeming on us before we enter. We are all just grains of sand, something that looks exactly like whatever the denizens of these catacombs are used to seeing. Do nothing to disturb them or their environment, and they shouldn't even notice us." Lord Toby snorted derisively.
"Seemings," he said with disdain. "Illusions can't match the practical arts."
Grinda quietly reminded herself not to turn him into a crab. He might prove to be practical later in human form. The glowing algae trick, much as she hated to admit it, was a good one. "It's not a question of matching. It is merely pooling our talents to maximize our chances of survival."
"Hey, are you talking about talent pools?"
Poltrow asked.
"I've heard of those, but haven't ever seen one. Kata said I probably never will, so I'd like to prove him wrong. I'm not much for swimming, though. Think they have one in Songlin? And do they allow swimmy wings?"
No one knew quite how to answer that, so she received a visual chorus of shrugs, and then they entered the catacombs of yore, two by two. Toby and Poltrow took the front, Fia and Arcabella walked behind them, and Gustav took up a spot in the rear with Grinda, keeping suspicious yellow eyes on her at all times. The goat went up in Grinda's estimation. He was the only one clever enough to recognize how dangerous she was. For a good half hour, there was only the single hallway and no terrors to speak of. Few rats or bats either, and those they saw took no interest in them. But the smell of rot grew stronger as they probed more deeply into the wide tunnel, and soon enough passages opened up to either side. The main hall also changed its nature, adding scalloped hollows set into the walls, in which muslin-wrapped bodies of expired pelians had been deposited, only to be chewed and gnawed on by the creatures living there. Something loud and large buzzed by Poltrow's head, startling her.
"Caw! What was that?"
She squinted after it.
"Was that one of them bees the sign warned us about? Didn't seem beeish. Looked grey to me."
"That could be interesting,"
Toby said, but refused to elaborate.
"I can't help but notice,"
Argabella said.
That some of the bodies don't appear to be stored properly in the little recessed shelving unit thingy-doodads. Like, maybe they weren't already dead, like, maybe they died here.
Grinda noticed that, too. A couple of bodies were sprawled on the ground and did not appear to have ever been wrapped up, and there were more of the strange gray bees now. The sandwich craned her head to peer between Fia and Argabella. There were more bodies ahead on the catacomb floor, some of them just scattered bones and skulls at this point. And Toby was accelerating, obviously excited, and in the wrong sort of way for a journey through a cave full of corpses and bees.
"This could be truly remarkable."
His voice floated back to them. The words were furry around the edges because of all the buzzing. He was walking straight into a veritable swarm of the things.
"Yes,
yes,"
he said, growing more excited.
"Oh, yes!"
"What is it, Lord Toby?"
Fia asked.
"Come see!"
He was practically dancing, and they could see him pointing at one side of the hallway, presumably where a body was stored. When they reached him, they were surrounded by hundreds of the gray furry insects, looping through the air, each one slow and fat like a bumblebee, except somehow not appearing very friendly. And what he was pointing to, Grinda saw, was a skeleton's ribcage that had become the framework for a hive.
"They're necrobees! Real necrobees!"
"Don't you mean zombies?"
Gustav quipped. But everyone ignored him.
"Beg your pardon, sir?"
the rogue asked. The Dark Lord sighed.
"They don't collect pollen, Poltro. They have been mutated. They eat the dead, mostly the skin, and turn it into one of the most prized substances in the world. Flesh honey."
Argabella gagged and covered her mouth.
"Ugh! That is nasty!"
"No, no, yes, but a single spoonful is supposed to add 10 years to your life."
Grinda had to interrupt.
"I'm sorry, Lord Toby, but this mutation can't be natural. Someone had to do this to them."
"Absolutely correct. A diabolical piece of magic, but so powerful one cannot help but be in awe. And I think you know only one mage could have accomplished this. The infamous Eastern Scallywag. That rascal. The dread necromancer. Steve."
Fia's fists clenched and her muscles bunched and rippled.
"Gah! Not Steve! I hate that guy!"
"You know him?"
Lord Toby said, his estimation of Fia visibly creeping upward.
"Let's just say he's one of the reasons I came to the West."
"I don't suppose,"
Poltro said, nervously eyeing the swarm around her.
"The dread necromancer Steve thought to make his mutated bees harmless?"
"Oh, no, they're lethal in the extreme,"
Toby said cheerfully.
"A single sting means certain death."
The buzzing around them got ominously louder.
"So, shall we move on?"
"Yes, as soon as I admit to Grinda that seemings do have their uses, we should all be dead by now and adding our bones to the fabulous charnel house you already see here."
He sounded way too delighted for someone standing ankle-deep in bones and bees, but the sandwich had never expected to hear him act even the tiniest bit humble.
"Oh," Grinda felt genuinely surprised. "Thank you, Lord Toby."
"Might you also have a way for us to get some flesh honey without dying?"
he asked. Argabella made a horking noise.
"Ugh! No, please don't say that, Lord Toby. It just gets worse in my head every time I hear it. I just threw up a little bit in my mouth."
"I don't have a way to do that. Sorry," Grinda replied, annoyed that he knew so much more about this newfangled flesh honey than she did. If they're anything like regular bees, the moment you invade their hive, they will notice you despite my seeming. Let's move on and not tempt fate any longer. She took great pains to hide how very much she wanted a spoonful, or actually jarful, of the honey for herself. At the end of each day, the youthfulness spells hung about her like layers of frayed, broken spider webs, and she was well enough aware that the wrinkle treatments were making her more and more smeary every year.
Still, many an old witch had died in pursuit of a bit of age magic like this flesh honey, and their corpses looked just magnificent, until something worse than necrobees ate them.
"I'll have to come back later, better prepared," Lord Toby said, with a sort of foolish bravado that got men killed while spelunking. "Now that I know they're here, I can return any time."
They carefully tiptoed through the bones of others who had obviously been even worse prepared, and once safely out of range of the buzzing, Argabella whispered to Fia in a perfectly audible voice,
"So, you dated a dread necromancer?"
"Very briefly," Fia admitted. "A huge mistake. I don't want to judge him on what he was into, because everybody has their thing that works for them, but it didn't work for me. That's all I'm saying."
"What was he into?"
Fia gestured to the bodies lying still all around them.
"Death."
Paltrow pointed to the shelves, which now had slight rectangular bulges in the middle of them.
"Those are new," she said. "Okay, if I take a closer look, my lord?"
"Of course." Lord Toby touched his hand to either wall to keep the glowing algae growing in front of them and to shine light on the new architecture. Paltrow brushed the dust from one of the rectangles and uncovered an inscription.
"Oh, it's a name and some dates. Very fancy. This must be where all the swell folks are stashed."
Argabella pointed down the hall.
"If that's the case, whoever's entombed there must have been very swell indeed."
Grinda followed her direction and spied a collection of candles and a couple sticks of incense burning several niches down. As they drew closer, a hooded figure detached from the gloom and greeted them. Apparently, he was not fooled by the seeming. Grinda felt a thrill of fear twang up her magically fortified spine.
"Blessings to you, travelers. Welcome."
He put his hands up to show he was unarmed, perhaps in reaction to something Fia did, involving creaking armor and unspoken threats of bodily harm.
"I am a man of peace."
Grinda thought that he was more of a man of illness once they got closer. His skin tone and lack of a chin were very similar to Lord Toby's, except his upper lip glistened with sweat that may have been the result of a fever. It couldn't be from recent exercise. He seemed to be barely breathing at all. Dark circles under his eyes testified to a lack of sleep, however, and the eyes themselves hinted at a touch of madness, or perhaps that was just the greenish tint given off by the algal illumination. Grinda subtly readied her wand in case he proved to be hostile, in spite of his protestations to the contrary. In her experience, people rarely pointed out how peaceful they were, unless they were preparing to threaten violence and wanted you to be a bit more relaxed.
"And what is your purpose, my good sir?" Toby asked.
"I tend the final resting place of my master, the most glorious and puissant Hero du Bronsted, who illuminated the world with his knowledge. May I tell you how he conquered death very briefly? It is my duty and will allow me to rest."
"Isn't that him?"
Toby pointed to the body resting behind the candles.
"Yes."
"So he's dead?"
"Yes."
"That would appear to belie the premise of your argument."
"No, no, I promise. The truth is fascinating and instructive. Only a moment of your time?"
The man gestured at them to come closer.
"Behold his face. Is it not miraculously preserved? He has been dead for 300 years, yet it appears he could wake from a nap at any moment."
As curious as the others, Grinda drew closer to examine the person lying in repose, hands folded across his chest. A distinguished figure of dark brown skin and fine embroidered robes, Hirudo Bronsted indeed looked to be merely sleeping and not long dead.
"It truly is a marvel," Lord Toby admitted. "How did he do this?"
"Leeches,"
Paltrow flinched.
"What?"
Grinda also registered that something was terribly wrong with that answer, but before she could process exactly why, the hooded man extended a finger toward the corpse and said,
"Look there,"
while audibly pulling a lever with his other hand, which was hidden by the bulk of his body. The floor dropped out from underneath them, and they succumbed to the merciless clutches of gravity. Howls and lamentations and panicked bleats erupted from their throats as they fell, and these met the mad cackling of the man who'd gulled them into danger. Grinda splashed into shallow water a couple of body lengths below, crumpling to her recently re-magicked knees before standing quickly. It was only deep enough to reach her calves, but it was utterly dark, and getting out of the pit would be problematic. Magic could do many things, but the liquid in this cave seemed to have some sort of dampener that leached away power, which was bad news for Grinda and Gustav in particular. Even Fia couldn't jump high enough to escape the pit, and the maniac wasn't going to keep the door open long anyway. It closed, even as Grinda considered giving Fia as much of a boost as the wand could squeak out. She checked her wand to make sure it hadn't broken in the fall. It hadn't. But it felt light in her hand, the sensation reminding her of the disappointment of an empty pitcher of margaritas. In the last remaining seconds of light, she pulled some of Lord Toby's algae off the walls and brought it down into the pit, where she redistributed it to the nearest wall, frowning as she did so. No wonder the algae worked. It wasn't particularly magical, which meant Toby just liked carrying around tubs of parasitic goo. Her ankles didn't feel right. She must have strained them, or maybe even sprained them in the fall.
"Lord Toby, could you please spread your wonderful fungus around this room so we can see what we're dealing with?" "It's algae," he said,
"and I'd be delighted to be able to see. I think I might have done something to my shins when we landed. I skipped leg day."
"And arms day,"
Fia muttered under her breath. Toby splashed toward the wall, and the others commented that they weren't quite feeling 100% either, though they stayed still in the darkness.
"That wasn't such a terrible fall," Fia said, "but they kind of hurt everywhere. Not like an oncoming bruise either, or a cracked rib."
"I cracked a rib once," Poltro reminisced. "I got ambushed by a hen house. Lucky to escape with my life, but this feels different for sure."
"It's getting worse too," Fia said. "Not better."
Grinda noticed that as well. Her knees were shaking with effort. Without her spells, she'd soon be both in pain and swiftly succumbing to her age.
"Toby, please hurry. Something is awry."
"Hey, I could use a shot awry,"
Poltro said, a hopeful note in her voice.
"Might you pour me some?"
"This is really hurty and I don't like it," Arcabella said. "It feels like... Hey, there's something on me. What is it? Get it off. God, get it off."
Thus began much splashing and yelling, and soon, thanks to the rapid spreading of glowing algae, there was light, and they saw that they were in a somewhat sizable cavernous space with a couple feet of water at the bottom, and that the water was full of leeches, because the leeches were now all over them. The things were a peculiar rotten yellow-green, and resembled nothing so much as mucousy boogers come to life and equipped with teeth.
"Cor, it's the acid leeches!" Poltro shouted. "They're gonna dissolve our giblets!"
The splashing and yelling intensified. Grinda thought it was much worse than that. She was fairly sure the water itself must be a low-grade acid, for she wasn't covered all over in leeches yet, but her skin was beginning to burn all over, and that was from falling into the pool to begin with. She scanned the walls and pointed.
"There, a ramp up and out on the other side. Let's get over there and then remove them."
As they discovered the ramp, the rest of the group ran for it. In her haste, Fia knocked Grinda with an elbow, and Grinda gasped as she rocked off balance and fell into the acid. Her hands burned in earnest now, her arms trembling, and she groaned as her very bones went frail and full of fire within withered arms. She felt her every year in that moment, every past ache and every hint of osteoporosis she'd magicked from her limbs.
"Help!"
she cried.
"I've fallen and I can't get up."
But the others were already ahead of her, even Gustav bounding out of the acid, his belly leached of hair and glowing a painful red.
"You didn't stop them from wanting to eat me. I'm not stopping them from running,"
the goat called over his bony shoulder. Grinda struggled to her feet, veiny hands on shaky thighs, wand still clutched desperately in her fingers. Her back was hunched, her hair falling out in clumps. One of her teeth went loose in its socket, and the world went blurry with myopia. She was old, by gods, truly old, and with this knowledge came utter helplessness. She couldn't even cross a street by herself, and she longed for a cane, even an ugly and twisted one like lesser witches carried for smacking cutpurses. Her knees wobbled, and she began to fall again, visions of broken hips dancing in what was left of her mind.
"Wesley,"
she called, seeing a shadowy figure gamble up ahead.
"Is that you, boy?"
"Gah!" Someone who was definitely not her nephew shouted, and then Grinda felt strong arms like oak branches catch her and swing her up to carry her like a baby, thankfully away from the burning pool.
"You're a good boy, Wesley,"
she said, and a distinctly feminine voice answered,
"You owe me for this, witch."
Soon Grinda felt stone under her crabbed feet. She could barely stand. Her balance wasn't what it used to be. Someone held her upright, and someone else began tugging at her here and there, and it hurt, but also felt lovely.
"You stop that right now, whippersnapper,"
she hissed.
"I'll turn you into a newt."
"That might be preferable," a peevish woman said. "Damaged newts can regrow limbs, but damaged rabbits just look patchy and furious."
The blur around Grinda's eyes suddenly went clear, and she saw Argabella and Fia on either side of her, annoyed as they pulled long acid green leeches off her withered arms. Each beast left a hideous burn behind, some showing muscle in the thin layer of fat. But as they were removed, she found her magic strength returning, and she was soon able to pull out her wand and shout,
"Rudy leche!"
All the leeches in the general area tore from their bodies and splattered the walls with yellow-green slime, causing a collective sigh of relief from Grinda's compatriots.
"Well, that was useful, I suppose," Topi said. "But do you have any healing spells?"
Grinda patted at her swiftly regrowing hair.
"That wasn't my concentration. Major in illusions, minor in manipulation. You?"
Toby turned a deep shade of puce.
"I went with a more hands-on approach."
"Then we'll just have to get out quickly and find a healer."
Grinda looked around grimly, noting that they would have to hurry if they wanted to survive long enough to do so. Their skin bubbled and hissed and oozed in the many places they'd acquired leeches, and it was irritated everywhere else from the acid bath, and she wished for the first time that she'd at least considered healing as an elective.
"That's it,"
Fia said, standing tall.
"Forget magic. We can do this. Toby, don't you have some milk in your pack? That neutralizes acid, so pass it around."
"But it's goblin yak milk. A rare..."
"My fist in your teeth won't be rare. Hand over the yak milk."
Soon they were dabbing their wounds with Toby's milk as Fia meted out her NyQuil, and Argabella sang a new and improved version of the Ouchie song that featured many fine rhymes and a repeating chorus of, "So let good healing rain, not today pain." Grinda was surprised to find her wounds going from red to pink to her usual pasty white as the wounds and pain simply melted away. She had never before considered that there might be a decent answer to anything other than magic, and she began to consider a trip to the Seven Toes, where there were supposed to be skin chirurgeons capable of altering one's appearance and even reversing the effects of aging. Soon they had a lovely collection of scars that would impress any future romantic prospects, but were no longer in agony as their flesh dissolved away. This curious quilt of healing worked, but it left them exhausted and with no remedy for future injuries. They shuffled up the ramp until they reached a door, and after confirming that it would open and they weren't actually trapped in the hateful leech pit, Grinda suggested that they rest in the chamber beyond, since it seemed a place of relative safety. With rotating watches, of course. Not that she would ever admit how very close she'd come to dying, old and blind, in the vat of leech acid.
"That guy took us for suckers,"
Fia groused.
"Bloody awful,"
Argabella agreed. Poltro nodded along.
"Cool. What a simple. We totally fell for it."
They grabbed a few hours of sleep each and ate some provisions. Lord Toby shared a wheel of cheese to go with some almost crackers, although they were forced to listen to him whine about his lost yak milk, before they deemed their entire party rested, wary, and determined to press on. As the others slept and Grinda took her watch, she carefully, quietly, replaced all her magical spells, tightening up her body and mind for what was to come. She never again wanted to feel as hopeless and alone as she'd felt in the leech pit, even if her cold heart was warmed just the tiniest bit to know that her compatriots, maybe one day her friends, had waded in to save her. Witches didn't give credit where credit was due, but she laid some enchantments over them while they slept to strengthen them for the journey ahead. When they woke and prepared to venture forth, the best way forward seemed to be a twisting stone stair that led them ever upward in tight circles that left Poltro quite dizzy. Fia took stock of where they were, tested several hallways, and then beckoned to the group to join her.
"This is the main passage,"
she said, pointing to the left, where Toby's algae marked the walls. To the right, the algae hadn't spread so far.
"So we are ahead of where we got dropped into the pit."
Only Fia felt like going left and getting revenge. That sickly madman had been too confident, and Grinda argued that the Gerudo Bronsted character might not have been dead at all.
"I think he might waken if we attacked, and we don't know his abilities. Surviving was victory enough, I think. Let's not make the same mistake twice."
She glared at Fia. "We should press on." This time the party agreed with the sandwich, and the giant fighter was left to fume. Argabella was kind enough to sing a small ditty called, "You Can Get Revenge Later, I Promise, and It's Not Like That Guy's Going Anywhere," and Fia was at least entertained, if not completely mollified. They followed the main passage for a long stretch without interruption, and in the first hour the fancy inscriptions disappeared, and they were again passing the anonymous, less well dead, ranks and ranks of them trussed up like particularly unappetizing hams and shoved clumsily into niches. But then the receptacles for the dead also ceased, and they were back to a single featureless corridor that closed in on them as they went.
"I've got a bad feeling about this,"
Poltro said as the path seemed a dead end ahead.
"If it turns out that this is a maze, we're going to get that monk and make him show us the way out," Fia said. "Maybe use him as a battering ram."
But the dead end was merely a sharp turn. They rounded the corner and the narrow passage abruptly opened before them into a large chamber lit by warm candles and torches on the walls. There were richly woven rugs on the floor, upholstered chaise longues, tapestries between the sconces, sculptures of graceful pixies and fairies and centaurs, and what looked like a bust of the King of the Morningwood oddly juxtaposed with a frolicsome oil painting of the lethal Lamatars of the northern Tebring Savannah, tearing into some hapless travelers and playing tug-of-war with their entrails. The aesthetic was one of charming menace. On the far side of the room, on a raised dais, rested what could only be considered a throne, and behind it was a carved wooden door that certainly qualified as fancy and, quite possibly, as schmancy.
"What is this place?"
Poltro wondered aloud.
"And who lit the candles and torches?"
Grinda responded, which she thought was a much more pertinent question. As if in answer, the door behind the throne opened, and a singular being emerged, bringing with him a distinct whiff of black licorice. He was mostly human, Grinda thought, but he was simply covered in an awful lot of gray hair. He looked borderline fluffy, but in an entirely different way than Argabella. Bare-chested and barefoot, he wore a green and blue kilt and carried a brushed copper goblet in one lightly furred hand. He had an impressive white mustache and beard that fell down to his sternum. His eyes were smeary shadows underneath a deep brow. Where the gray hair didn't cover it, his skin was bright white, not white in the way she was, like the pale-skinned people of Borix or parts of Burdell, but white like powdered sugar. He stopped when he saw them.
"Oh! Hello!"
he called, his mouth splitting into a pleasant smile. His voice rumbled and tumbled like the joyful growls of a puppy tugging on a sock.
"How nice to have visitors today."
"Good morning, sir. Or is it afternoon? I don't know what time it is,"
Fia said.
"Who might you be?"
"I am the steward of these catacombs, known in the world as Yor."
"Oh, so that's why they call these the catacombs of Yor."
The smile disappeared, though the voice remained friendly and patient.
"No, it's Yor."
"Isn't that what I just said? Yor?"
"Yor! with an umlaut over the O, and no E.
Fia stole a glance at Grinda, perhaps seeking guidance, but she had nothing to offer but a helpless shrug. If this was the namesake of the catacombs, he had to be hundreds of years old, and such people often developed eccentric behaviors.
"I'm sorry. I'm not hearing a difference," Fia said.
"There's a tremendous difference," the man said, placing his goblet down on the small table next to the throne and taking a few steps closer before folding his thin hands together. "Dragon,
you're,
Fia said. The man's expression darkened, and his voice lost much of its initial warmth.
"You know, it's quite rude not to make the effort to say someone's name correctly. It's a basic courtesy that should be extended to everyone."
"I'm trying, sir. Honestly, please forgive me. I've never been able to roll my tongue or swallow my R's. I just don't know what I'm doing wrong."
"You're not pronouncing the umlaut. You must respect the umlaut."
He pointed a bony white finger at Argabella.
"Yo! Rabbit of unusual size, you try."
"Umlaut?"
she said at first, then gulped, her entire body shaking.
"I mean, you're..."
"No!"
he roared, all civility gone, and the avuncular grumble turned to a natural rage.
"You disrespect the umlaut! I can hear you not saying it."
"I tried, I swear, I'm so sorry,"
Argabella cried.
"We don't have umlauts where I come from. I don't even know why we have semicolons. Please don't be shoutful."
The catacomb steward demanded that each of them try to say his name and grew increasingly angry as they all failed, in his judgment, to respect the umlaut. Poor Gustav, when it was his turn, dropped a steamy bevy of fright pellets and wailed,
"I don't have a uvula. I don't even know how I can talk. Goats weren't made for umlauts." "You,"
the enraged man pointed at Grinda.
"You've got some miles on you. Surely you've traveled and studied among other cultures. Show these youngsters how it's done."
Grinda cleared her throat and drew herself up tall.
"You're..."
He flinched as if from a blow, then raised his chin in a fit of intense pique.
"I'm afraid," he said, "that it is time for you to feel afraid."
"But I'm already there,"
Argabella wailed, and then the gray-furred man clutched his hands into fists, threw back his head, and bellowed at the ceiling. His shadowed eye sockets focused on Toby, and his right hand shot toward the Dark Lord's head, a black vapor snaking out and wreathing Toby's skull for a brief moment before dissipating. For a second, it seemed as if absolutely nothing had been accomplished, but then a swarm of fluttering, paper-winged moths manifested in the room and flew at Toby's face.
"Moths!
He screamed, green bolts issuing from each fingertip and incinerating a few of his attackers as they traveled to the ceiling, where a doughy cloud formed. The Dark Lord fell under a hail of moths and a panicked summoning of delectable buttery croutons, and his cries of terror eventually ceased, leaving only a mound of fried bread chunks and moth bodies atop a sobbing man-child.
"That was pretty weird,"
Yor said into the silence that followed, his voice flat.
"Let's try the dashing rogue next."
His hand shot black oily smoke at Poltro, and she jerked, grunted, and found herself confronted by a ravenous llamatar. A horrific, crazed llama head with carnivorous teeth grimaced at her and spat as it loomed above a thickly muscled human male's body, dressed in ill-fitting clothes taken from past victims. These brainless, spitting monsters no doubt had been created by some witch or wizard long ago for a cause he or she thought noble, but now their reproducing population in the northern savannah of Tebring made the entire area a death trap. The creature made a noise somewhere between a yodel and a gargle before the head whipped down at Poltro's face and snapped its teeth where her nose had been a second earlier. said Snoot, was no longer there only because the rogue had fallen back with a cry of fear, and Grinda wondered why your spell hadn't summoned a chicken.
Better! Improbably fatal,
Yor commented,
but they've seen it before. Come on, rabbit girl, give me something fun.
Argabella rocked back under the black mist, but steadied herself just in time to confront a slender and somewhat familiar-looking man wearing a Swords in Daisies concert shirt. He smiled placatingly and brandished a pair of bongos in one hand and a maraca in the other.
Accountants never account for anything, he said. The arts, that's the way to go. Music is the only steady career for a girl like you, if you just make some effort to look like you have loose morals and a song in your heart. Come on, shake the maraca. Dad?
Argabella's jaw hung open in horror.
If you keep clacking those abacus beads all night, your palms are going to grow hair. Keep wearing those sweater vests and parting your hair down the middle and no one will ever love you.
Grinda had seen enough. Argabella's dad looked withering and damaging, but not immediately lethal, unless one was allergic to percussion instruments. The Lamatar was something else, for it had taken a step forward and was zeroing in on the cowering Poltro. The witch employed her wand to blow dust into the Lamatar's eyes just as it lunged forward again. It flinched and missed, its teeth clacking on air, and bugled its frustration. Knowing what was coming next, Grinda faced an enraged Yor, who shot a geyser of thick smoke at her head. She twitched the tip of her wand to dissipate it, and grew mildly alarmed when that didn't work. The smoke did not behave as smoke should. She applied more mental force, slashing the wand's tip through the air, yet still the smoke came for her, and she realized that there was no avoiding it. Her eyes widened, now fully alarmed, and then her vision dimmed as the smoke shrouded her sight and the spell invaded her psyche. Her vision cleared a second later, but Grinda did not move. She did not move because she could not. Her fear was no tangible thing, but rather the inability to act. To control her environment, to feel anything but utterly helpless. The spell had paralyzed her in place instead of manifesting anything with teeth. She was able to perceive, however, that Fia wasn't standing still for her secondhand smoke. She grunted and charged Yor with an implacable expression on her face, sword ready to strike. Yor hit her with the spell before she could get in range, and her charge abruptly ended as a small boy with dark brown skin like hers filled the space between her and the white-furred wizard, dead eyes staring at her and a hatchet buried in his left temple. Grinda couldn't be sure because Argabella's dad was loudly haranguing her about getting a real job as a wench down at the bar, but she was fairly certain she heard the mighty Fia say, "Beef," or something similar in a tiny voice. Grinda focused on the warrior. The small boy calmly wrested the hatchet out of his skull, switched it to his right hand, and threw it at Fia, who flinched away at the last possible second. The axe sank into her unprotected left shoulder instead of her face. Any hope Grinda had cherished that Yor's magic was limited to illusion shattered. That axe was very, very real. Fia cried out and dropped her sword as the boy advanced on her with slow, plodding steps.
"Yes! Now that's what I'm talking about!"
Yor said, his voice triumphant. He grinned nastily and said,
"Might as well."
Shooting another stream of black mist past Grinda, she wondered for a moment who he was targeting until she heard a despairing bleat and realized she'd forgotten the goat. No, the chosen goat. Perhaps his aura would deny Yor's magic, and even if it didn't, she reasoned, what possible fear could a kid goat have that would do them any damage? Grinda felt a spark of hope for an entire second before it was utterly crushed. Gustav did have a kid fear, and when it manifested, Grinda would have screamed if she hadn't been frozen in place. For it was her nephew, Worstly, alive and unharmed and smiling a merciless smile at the goat as he brandished a knife in his hand and said,
"Sorry, Gus, but my mom's ready to try out some new recipes and you're the main ingredient."
Unlike Fia's adversary, this Worstly didn't maintain his focus on his target. He looked about him, utterly confused by his surroundings, realizing that he was not on his farm in Borix. His eyes fell first on a sobbing Poltro, trying to escape the lamatar that had latched onto her cape and was trying to reel her in. But then they slid past, and he said,
"Artgrinda?"
An instant before the lamatar gave up on Poltro and lashed out its long neck to take a mortal bite out of the innocent and somewhat stupid boy staring at her dumbfounded. The razor teeth scissored into Worstley's flesh and pulled away, blood fountaining out of the boy's throat as strands of muscle clung to the sides of the beast's mouth. Grinda's nephew gurgled and fell backward in a shower of his own blood, and Grinda felt the strangest sensation, something she hadn't known in many years. Grief.
"That was a surprising resurrection,"
Gustav said, almost as if nothing had happened. Grinda could hear him trotting up beside her on the stone floor as the lamatar hunched over its kill and took another bite of her nephew's raw flesh.
"I mean, obviously more so for Pooh Boy than for me, but wow, you know?"
Grinda was an old witch, and she had seen many things, and she knew that this version of Worsley wasn't real. It was some sort of golem or seeming called to life by Yor's magic. Yet deep within her frozen form, her heart felt heavy and cold. The others, however, seemed to feel nothing.
"Cool! That was a close one,"
Poltro said, scrambling over to them with tears in her eyes.
"Thank you, Miss Grinda, for what you did, or else that would have been me getting all chewed on."
"I don't think she can talk right now,"
Gustav said.
"Well, we should help her then. We'll get out of this together."
The goat snorted.
"Help? When have any of you ever helped me?"
"Just now! My lamatar ate your farm boy!"
"But that wasn't you, or him either, because his body is in Borix. None of this is real."
"The lamatar wouldn't be here if it wasn't for me, so I reckon I did help, and I reckon it is real, as I'm covered in blood and viscera and whatnot."
The billy goat spat directly at the rogue's face. But he then turned his head to assess the remaining threats.
"Fine. The lamatar is busy eating my Pooh Boy, so I'll take down the mean dad and you take care of the boy with the gaping head wound. Grinda, you stand there and do absolutely nothing, as per usual."
"That's a solid plan, that is,"
Poltro agreed, and slunk off to the left, where Grinda could just make out Fia backing away at the advance of the smallish boy she should have had no trouble cutting down. Or she would have had no trouble if she were armed at this point with anything beyond pruning shears. Though Grinda supposed Fia could at least remove the hatchet from her own shoulder. Perhaps, like her, the mighty warrior was fighting a bigger battle on the inside. Argabella was likewise backing away from her father, who was loudly explaining that if Argabella would have just listened and practiced more with her lute, then maybe her mother wouldn't have left her father for a slimy CPA and they could all make tie-dyed shirts and go on tour with a band called Fish. The bard screamed at him to shut up, and the father's grip on the maraca became a bit more serious and, as Argabella would have said, smackful. Gustav lowered his head and charged, thudding his head into Argabella's father's flanks and sending the man staggering to the left, where he stumbled and hit his head against the base of a marble statue, lapsing into unconsciousness and mumbling about royalties. Argabella shouted for joy and praised Gustav as the goatiest goat who ever goated, leaving Grinda to wonder at what tender age Argabella must have run away from home or started hiding who she really was from her father. But that celebration roused the attention of the lamatar, who looked up from its meal and realized that there was even fresher meat walking around than the farm boy it had just killed. It rose with a bloody muzzle, bugled a yodel gargle, and lunged after Gustav. By that point, Grinda was actually rooting for the lamatar. A glow from the back of the chamber drew her attention for a brief moment. Yor had closed his eyes, and his lips rippled in an ecstatic curl at the edges. He was taking delight, even nourishment, from their fear, and his skin radiated a soft light that hadn't been there before, his sagging flesh a bit filled out, and his wrinkled features smoothed to the chiseled planes of youth. Movement drew Grinda's eyes to the left. Her eyeballs were beginning to ache and dry out. Poltro leapt onto the back of the shambling boy plaguing Fia, reached around, and plunged her dagger repeatedly into his chest, all to no avail, except to affect the boy's posture somewhat. He did not even jerk in response to the stabbings, but kept on moving toward Fia, who continued to back away. Poltro eventually gave up, slipped off the boy's back and looked curiously at her knife, which was bloodless.
"Cor," she said. "Cutter led me to believe knives would work a whole lot better than that. Maybe I should have paid the smith for that extended warranty of functionality and efficaciousness. People say their knives always stop working and go bad right after the 2-year limited warranty you get with the blade. But I didn't believe them until now."
But Gustav didn't have time for warranties. He was running for his life.
"Fear!"
he bleated as he galloped around the cavern, the slobbery Lamatar giving chase. They were behind Grinda now, and she couldn't see them, though she could hear the goat's trotters clopping and the heavy footfalls of the Lamatar punctuating its demented bugling.
"A little help?"
It occurred to Grinda that the goat could lead the Lamatar to her, and she'd be devoured easily, unable to dodge or even flinch as the teeth closed around her throat. She felt panic rising and interpreted every new sound as potentially the last she'd hear. And she had never known such perfect helplessness. Not even in the leech acid, not since she was a little girl, long before she'd mastered magic and...
"Fear! Help, Gustav!"
Argabella said, rushing over to where Poltro stood, bemused by her knife.
"We'll take care of the boy!"
It sounded so simple. But the boy, who'd been content to shamble forward slowly, became quite animated once Argabella tackled him to the ground. Any interruption of his progress toward Fia aroused a spirited defense. Argabella's inexpert attempts to subdue him only resulted in her getting punched in the nose and throat until she rolled off with a cry. Poltro fell upon him again, having decided to give her malfunctioning knife one more try. She stabbed him in the throat, and that produced no blood or even wasted breath, for Fia's fear was not anything alive, but rather something dead. Grinda guessed the boy was something conjured by the power of the dread necromancer Steve, though Fia's meeting with him hadn't been during her childhood. That was what you got for confiding in someone on a third date, she supposed.
"Go for the brain!"
Argabella cried.
"Mess with its brain!"
A flying fist punched her again, and she gave a tiny yip before falling still.
"All right!"
Poltro said, and plunged her knife down through the boy's eye, even as he clocked her upside the temple. His struggle ceased, and he lay still, while Poltro moaned and clutched her head. Argabella didn't move at all. Fia inched forward into Grinda's view as the warrior pivoted to face the Lamatar. She finally wrenched the hatchet out of her shoulder with her right hand, grunting in pain, but looking determined and murderous. Blood poured from the wound, but her eyes blazed as she found her target. She threw the axe at the Lamatar, and it at least hit him, though it wasn't with any part of the blade. The haft thunked off its chest, and the creature grunted and roared, fully aware of what the intent was. Or maybe, Grinda thought. It was roaring in response to Fia lunging to retrieve her dropped sword. Whatever the impulse, the Lamatar was already running full speed while Fia was starting from a dead stop. Gustav rocketed past and looped back to where Grinda was frozen, and Fia and the Lamatar crashed together to the ground, fighting over her sword. She hammered a fist into its jaw, and the fuzzy head slid away from her on the long neck like a yo-yo on a string, its body rolling over slightly so that its front was exposed. Fia took advantage and levered up a knee into its groin. It ceased grasping for the sword and instead rolled over completely onto its back and grasped at its bruised nads. That allowed Fia to retrieve her sword, regain her feet, and plunge the blade into the Lamatar's chest. It died with ululations and a torrent of diarrhea. Yor clapped 3 times and grinned in appreciation. Grinda thought he looked a bit taller and had filled out to the point where his kilt strained to contain him.
"After a slow start, those were some fantastic fears. And delicious, by the way. That meal will last me a while. And congratulations on surviving your fears, because most people perish by them. You are free to go."
He waved at the wall nearest the mound of moths and bread under which Toby had fallen and under which he remained inert. A door that had not been there before appeared between 2 sconces and opened, revealing a hallway bereft of corpses and well lit by torches.
"That will lead you out. Belladonna the healer is just outside the catacombs, should you make it past the tongues."
He cast a doubtful gaze at them, ending with a look at the mound of moths and bread chunks bearing Lord Toby.
"I don't think you'll make it, but maybe you could pay her with some of those golden croutons, if you do."
Yor chuckled at his own joke as he scooped up his copper goblet and sauntered toward the door behind the throne from which he had originally emerged.
"Respect the umlaut, kids," he said.
Fia yanked her sword out of the Lamatar's chest, and bloody goo fountained out of the wound, splashing noisily onto the floor. She roared and charged after the emotional vampire, but Yor shut the door in her face, and his outline immediately disappeared, as if it had been a solid wall all along. She hurled some choice Eastern slang terms for anatomy at the wall, hoping he'd be able to hear them.
"Oh, what's that last one mean?"
Gustav asked, his trotter shifting next to Grinda. When the sandwich didn't answer, he cocked his head at her.
"Still can't move or speak. Guess he exaggerated about your freedom to go."
Gustav clopped around until he was standing uncomfortably close to Grinda's flashy new hiking boots, with his tail facing her knees. He swung his head to look at her over his bony shoulder.
"I just nearly got eaten by a Lamatar. Not really different from any other day, though. Being a goat among humans means I could be on the menu whenever you guys get hungry. Every time your nephew appeared in the barnyard, I wondered whether it was to feed me or to feed his family. Remember when Lord Toby and Poltro were trying to turn me into curry and you did absolutely nothing to help me? Well, I've whipped up a little something to pay you back for that."
The billy goat's tail lifted and Grinda felt hot little plops landing on the tops of her feet and the bottoms of her shins.
"I call those cocoa pebbles, or chocolate soil, gourmet butt dumplings if you prefer, cooked to order just for you at my body temperature. That's what I feel like all the time living in your world, helpless and crapped upon. You get to feel it for a few minutes. Please enjoy this tiny serving of justice."
Grinda's first instinct was to internally rage and swear vengeance on the goat. But she just couldn't get up the energy. Something about being defenseless for the first time since her youth made her realize that for all her haughtiness, she couldn't survive alone. Whether it was Milieu Goober Snooch's loving care, the adoration of her sparkle crabs, the aid of the goblin beauticians, or Fia and Argabella bravely storming through acid to help her, she couldn't get by without a little help from her friends. And now she knew. Gustav's greatest fear was being betrayed and eaten by his so-called compatriots. No wonder he pooped on everyone. He expected that everyone, sooner or later, would poop on him. Ignoring the warmth on her feet, Grinda watched events unfold, still out of her control. Fia turned from the wall and surveyed the room, and her broad shoulders slumped for a few seconds. Then she sniffed, flicked her sword to sling away the gore adhering to it, and stomped over to where Argabella lay curled up next to the twice-dead corpse of that stubbornly undead kid. Poltro moaned and rubbed at her temples, but otherwise didn't move.
"Honey bunny,"
Fia whispered tenderly, kneeling down and stroking long fingers through soft fur.
"Are you okay?"
Grinda noted that Fia was not okay, despite walking around as if she were. That hatchet wound looked nasty, and it was still bleeding. Fia shook the bard's shoulder.
"Hey, wake up, girl. We have to go."
The bard did not respond.
"Argabella?"
Even Grinda's cold heart ached. The rabbit girl wasn't moving. 15. Next to a newly created orifice and much screaming. Fia could feel the tears welling in her eyes and didn't care. She was just about to shout Argabella's name when the rabbit woman coughed, wheezed, spat blood, and made a tiny mewling noise.
"Everything hurts. My nose especially. Is my lute broken? I need to sing the ouchie song."
Fia laugh cried in relief. Suddenly everything was fine again.
"Your lute's okay, I think, and you'll be fine too. But we've got to get you to the healer."
Argabella's eyes went wide, and she almost touched Fia's shoulder.
"You too, though."
Gustav pranced over to Lord Toby's moth mound and festively kicked him in the ribs.
Good news. You're not dead yet,
the goat told the hedge wizard.
Get up so we can get out of here.
A spray of crispy bread and insects at one end revealed where Toby's mouth was, and soon the entire pile shifted as Toby struggled to his feet, flailing and squeaking a tiny bit when he realized there were moth corpses on him.
No, it all... this is an outrage! No one treats the Dark Lord like this!
Fia noticed that he had a dead moth stuck in his beard extensions and failed to mention the fact. Added to the glowing algae and crouton muck, it looked rather hardcore.